Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed in Radio DMG may or may not be the views and opinions of the DMGI's family of sites. All music used in this podcast is the property of whoever made it, and no copyright infringement is intended. God bless this albatross, and hold on tight for the awesome you're about to receive.
It's good to be the king.
Welcome to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, and I'm here with...
Sarah.
Sarah?
Yes.
Just Sarah.
Someone who is annoyed with Audacity crashing?
Oh, yes. This is actually take two of this. And if you're lucky, I'll include take one in some capacity. But what happened was, just like our viewing of Harry Potter... Audacity crashed halfway through recording this episode. This is episode 16 of Radio DMG. Our feature today is an interview I did with Jeremy Lee from Akon 22, and we're going to be talking a little bit about Harry Potter 7 Part 2. Now, when we went and saw it, it's Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, Part 2. We went and saw it on Thursday night, midnight. So, Friday morning, depending. But what happened was, we went and saw it at the Century 16 Theater here in Aurora, Colorado. And while we were watching it, somebody at Excel accidentally... hit some type of power line or something and knocked the power out for the whole block that the theater is on, thus causing the emergency lights to go on and the movie to cut out, and over 1,700, that's 1,700 plus
people, Harry Potter fans,
some people cosplayed there too, that was kind of interesting, to be, well... there's blood in the water.
Cut off right before climax?
No, something like that. They were unfulfilled that night. They were very unfulfilled that night. What happened was, like I said, the power went out, but... Oh, real quick note about this particular episode. If you haven't seen Harry Potter 7 Part 2, or you feel like you're allergic to spoilers... you're going to break out in hives because we're going to discuss that movie as spoilerifically as possible. So if you want to avoid those, just look at the timestamps and go directly to the interview. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Or any money for that matter, because we're not paying you. You should pay us. Yeah. By the way, click on our sponsors. Donate. We'll be adding a new sponsor soon, too. So yes. It's kind of hard to get back into the groove because we were in such a great groove. And then Audacity. Ooh, Audacity. With all these audio problems, you'd think we were cross-border gaming or something.
Should we add porno music to the background?
We should. We should have music in the background. Delightful techno musics. And the soundboard. I recently listened to episode 65 and they go nuts with the little soundboard.
Oh gosh.
Oh yes.
Ooga.
Now, stuff like fail from Micah. Yeah. And anyways, Hey, love you guys. Yeah, I know. Anyways, we went to Harry Potter 7.
So we saw about 2/3 of the movie in 2D.
Yeah.
And then we went home and slept for a couple hours. And then I think I was a little too tired to watch it last night on Friday night. So
yeah, not on Friday
night. We waited another day, and then we watched it Saturday night, which is tonight. And
we watched it in 3D.
Yeah, and we didn't have to pay for it.
Nope. Oh, actually, let's talk a little bit more about the situation. Anyways, what happened was we were watching the movie. It was interesting. And
Harry
then
was about to make out with Severus Snape.
Yeah.
Or so it seems.
Yes. It cut out at the perfect spot. It was right after they destroy the Horcrux that's in the what is that pronounced? The tiara thingy. What did they call it?
I have no idea.
It starts with a D. The Diab or something like that. They destroy that one in the little cup thing. Mm-hmm. After they destroy the little cup thing, he gets ticked off and breaks down the shield. And then they find the little tiara thing in there. And they stab that with a basilisk tooth. And it breaks down. And then after that, there's a part where Harry uses his little mind thing to locate. He uses his Voldemort sense to discover where Voldemort's going to be, and they go down to the little to the dock area, and Voldemort's over there with Snape, and Voldemort's like, you know,
you don't need to recap the entire movie.
No.
So Voldemort kills Snape.
Yeah, the snake's killing Snape. Snape gets killed by Snape. The snake kills Snape.
Give it up.
Okay, Snape. Ugh. Anyways, He's dying there, bleeding, kind of looking puffy. And then Harry Potter comes in, and he leans in, and he puts his hand on Snape's neck to stop the bleeding. And he looks into his eyes and leans forward. And then right before their big makeout session, the lights flip on, the screen flashes off. And that's what happened, leaving 1,700 people plus people
in the lurch,
and that was kind of crazy. We started at first trying to figure out what went wrong. We figured it was some type of mistake. Maybe they were maybe somebody fell asleep at the reel or something. But then we found out that they're trying to get us out of the theater. They need people to evacuate the theater.
Yes.
And so we worked our way through the crowd outside into the open air, which spelled suspiciously like pot. And then we walked a little bit and then to what we thought was a cop car, and it wasn't a cop car. It was somebody's detailing light job thing that was green.
Mm-hmm.
Then we decided, well, let's walk back and find somebody. We walked back and we found that one guy who I think you say he might be a rejectionist because he was just wearing a random t-shirt.
Mm-hmm.
But he was staff, and he told us to go and talk the next day, take our ticket stubs and receipts, to talk to somebody named Shantae or something like that.
Yeah, it was someone named Shantae.
That was kind of funny, yeah.
So we went back yesterday, Friday, the day after, and we got more than our money's worth.
Oh, yes.
We got our money's worth because...
Well...
Philip brought our concession receipt, too.
She
gave us not just 2 ticket passes, but... Four ticket passes, so that kind of makes up for it.
Yeah, I remember you were like, why should we bring this receipt? I was like, well, why not? Maybe I'll get my money back for the $3.75 Sour Patch Kids that I bought. I know, that's... You chewed me out on that in the previous file. And now it's lost to time. Maybe. I might be able to pull off some technical wizardry. You're a wizard, Philip.
No, you're not.
No, I'm not a wizard. I'm not the wizard. I'm so bad. Anyways. Yeah. Anyways, what happened was we found them and we left. And as we were leaving the parking lot, about 5 or 6 cop cars showed up, which is probably why a lot of people were pretty grumpy. Because, the mall that was there, the same mall that we got kicked out of in an earlier episode. Yeah. That same mall, the mall cops called the real cops to come by because, you know, they get worried. They're afraid, oh my gosh, these angry Harry Potter cosplayers and stuff are out of the theater. They're upset. They're totally going to knock off JCPenney. Totally. Because that's exactly what Harry Potter fans do.
Yeah. And so, while the theater tried to get everyone to evacuate within 10 minutes, it took them over an hour.
Yeah.
And the cops showing up exacerbated help. Things. Yeah.
Especially considering that, like, I think part of that crowd was high.
You think?
Yeah, I think. They weren't. Anyways, yeah, that happened. Then we went and saw it again today in 3D, and I wasn't really impressed with much of the 3D on this, because, to be honest, 3D only works when you're looking in on something. Like, you use the 3D in a movie for depth, to give you a depth to things. Like, the 3DS does it, the earlier 3D movies like Coraline and Avatar do this. How to Train Your Dragon was really good at it, and so was Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs.
Was Coraline the first 3D movie that I saw?
Yeah, I think we saw it in 3D. Remember the garden part? Yeah, we saw it in
3D, but I don't remember seeing a 3D movie before that.
No.
So it's kind of surprising, because it feels like it was 2.5 years ago.
Yeah. I think the best part of Coraline would have to be, like, when they show off that garden area, and you can see the expanse of the garden. There's a lot of really huge scenery in Harry Potter 7 Part 2, and they really should have taken advantage of that. Give us some depth to it, some scope to it. I think the best looking 3D sequences, though, were like when he's in the train station after Harry Potter dies.
Mm-hmm. And King's Cross Station.
King's Cross Station, and they're like the part when he looks under there and you see baby Voldemort, kind of.
That
like,
was creepy. Oh my gosh.
Undead fetus Voldemort.
Yes, it was like, this is what happens when you have an abortion.
That's horrible. Huh. We're still safe for work, so that's good. Anyways, there's a lot of blood in this one. I think the movie has grown up quite a bit with its audience.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Harry's got chest hair.
Ay, ay, ay.
Yes.
Ron has
fluffy man boobs.
Fluffy man boobs.
Yes.
Hermione has boobs.
Yeah, get some Hermione cleavage. Like,
there is a lot of cleavage for her, huh? Remember in part one when they have that thing and when he destroys that one Horcrux and he sees like an image of Harry and Hermione making out.
Oh gosh,
you remember that? Yeah, and he's like
Oh yeah, good makeout scene between. Makeout scene. Good kissing scene between Ron and Hermione.
After they destroy the goblet, Horcrux and all that water, that part there was great. Mm-hmm. Although there is a part where Ginny and Harry kiss, and then that was like
weak.
Oh my gosh, it was weak. I was kind of disappointed we didn't get to see Neville and
Luna. Yeah.
Yeah. Some Neville and Luna action there. Neville was pretty good in this. The actor that they got to play Neville in here, he got to be really awesome at points in this movie. And he's really funny, and I hope he gets more jobs after this. Because unlike Daniel Radcliffe, I think that the person who plays Neville Longbottom deserves to have a career after this.
Yeah, just like our Patterson, I think he can move on from that franchise.
That being said, some people... Okay, Alan Rickman is wonderful.
The guy who plays Voldemort.
Severus Snape. Alan Rickman is Severus Snape. Yeah, I remember, it's kind of funny. He wasn't able to kill Bruce Willis, but he could kill Dumbledore. So Bruce Willis is more powerful than Dumbledore. We all knew this. Anyways, I think Severus Snape, the part where... Remember, they changed it a little bit from the book.
Mm-hmm.
Like, where Harry takes Severus Snape's tears and puts them in the Pensieve. To see, like, his memories. The part where they go through Snape's memories was... Oh, that was one of the best parts of that movie.
It was my favorite.
It was so great.
Now,
and
in the book, I can't remember. In the book, are Lily and Severus friends growing up?
Yeah. I think they might have added that.
I think they met at school.
Yeah, I think they met. Yeah, they met at school.
But in the movie, they were before school.
Yeah, they were friends before school, and that makes it better.
Yeah,
I feel that having these writers go through and chop up J.K. Rowling's book to make it something more palatable works. Although they did tack on that horrible epilogue.
Oh god!
The epilogue. Like,
all these girls are in the theater crying, and I don't know why. And then they bring on the cheese, and it's so weird because they're playing these 36-year-olds.
Yeah, that was so bad.
And the kids that they have these really big wigs on for some reason. I don't know
that
why.
Was kind of ugh. You know, okay. Some parts of the movie were really great, like Miss Weasley.
She has one line in the whole movie, and it's not my daughter, bitch, or something like that.
She delivers it fairly well.
One line in the entire
movie. Yeah, we're not gonna. I mean, we're still safe. We're working with the B word.
There were a lot of characters that only had one line in the movie.
Yeah, one. Okay, you know, I think that like when Tonks and Remus died, that was, you know, I kind of wanted to see more of the action and fighting with those.
Yeah, but I was kind of surprised that there wasn't as much of the fighting.
They were trying to be more personal with that, but it kind of pulled out the fact that, like, J.K. Rowling's book in this one, she's just like, I'm just going to kill off as many characters as I can because everyone was so affected with Sirius Black, and then Dumbledore.
And you know what kind of surprised me? Okay, so they're fighting in the castle while Harry's running around killing Horcruxes and looking in a pensieve for an hour. And then he comes out of the pensieve and no one is around. He's walking to the Forbidden Forest and it's like, where is everyone? Oh, there's Ron and Hermione sitting on the steps.
Like, interrupting their makeout session to feel concerned for Harry.
They weren't making out. They were sad about George being dead.
Yeah.
But No one was fighting anymore. It's like, where did everyone go?
It does show that, like, there's a bunch of holes in the book.
No one cares that he's headed to the Forbidden Forest to get himself killed. And then
when Voldemort dies,
it's like he just comes back into the room and no one is talking to him. He's just walking through and everyone's leaving him alone. It's kind of weird.
It felt like they didn't really know what to do with the characters at that point. Like, for example, the little ending sequence where he snaps the Elder Wand in half and tosses it over there. And then they kind of wander over, looking pensive on the bridge.
Back towards the castle.
Yeah. To me, that felt like they felt like they didn't know what to do with the characters.
Mm-hmm.
It was still a pretty good ending to it. But I feel that there's some spots where it could have been a lot stronger. Because the whole point of the Harry Potter books was more of the personal growth and such of the character. At this point, though, it's not like he grew up somewhere along the way in the books. And it just kind of, I think he grew up way too fast in the books and in the movies to a point where he didn't have an actual character arc to go through. So a lot of the characters around him built that up. I felt that Hermione and Ron Weasley, their bit there, I feel that their character arcs actually grew
stronger
in this movie.
Yeah.
And I do feel that
Who's your favorite Harry Potter character?
I like Luna Lovegood.
From the books and the movies?
I think the little girl they got for her is great. I like the part where she's running up there and she's wearing like purple pants and everyone else is wearing uniforms.
Yeah, and she's got this bright, like very bleach blonde hair.
Yeah, she just stands out from it and it's funny.
Mm-hmm. She's like, you listen to me right now, Harry Potter.
Yeah.
And it was so,
you know, because she's the only one, she's the only character that gives him, any real guff in this. Everybody else is like, oh, Harry, oh, let me cling to your leg for a little bit. No, Hagrid, get off.
You're creepy, and that was really bad English accent.
I know. I'm not British. I think people can tell.
Blimey.
Okay, I'll stop. Anyways, that was just kind of, I did feel really, really...
Well, my favorite Harry Potter character is Hermione.
Hermione?
Even though I mispronounced her name for the first two books.
Yeah.
And then the movie came out.
Yep. I think that, like, they really, really justified Snape. And I think they were a lot clearer about it in this than they were in the book. Because some stuff in the book, you're like, oh, I see how that works. It was just more muddled in the book. I feel that the movie...
you couldn't see the magic actually happening before your eyes.
So yeah.
They can explain it a lot quicker.
Oh, yes. I felt that, like, the changes... Like, remember how they changed it so that Severus Snape and Lily met when they were younger, mm-hmm. before Hogwarts?
Before school, yeah.
Yeah, that made it... That made that whole connection there perfect. That spot there where, like, he's holding Lily Potter's body... And Harry's looking on at that point.
Mm-hmm.
The way that works, or the part where he sends out his
Patronus. Patronus. It's the same as hers.
Yeah, and... well, his is a stag. Hers was a doe.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like, that works perfectly. They made that work.
And, okay, so when he's talking to Dumbledore and he sends out his Patronus, was that when he sent the sword?
Yep.
That's what I thought.
Yeah. And he also moved the other sword out of Gringotts and stuff. And you kind of get the feeling at that point there. I do feel that, like, when Harry, after he sees the stuff in the pensieve, and he sits down there and he just looks... The look on his face is... That's the best acting Daniel Radcliffe has put into anything in a long time.
Yeah, I don't know who directed that movie, but I think they did a pretty good job.
Yeah, they did. Especially considering that he's kind of a... He doesn't really fit the Harry Potter character. He grew into it for a bit, then he grew out of it real quick.
Yes,
but at that
around
point,
the time when he turned 18 and he started doing the naked
theater,
yeah.
I feel that that point there where he's sitting down on the steps there, just like completely crushed by everything that's been revealed to him.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I was like, there is the end of his character growth arc. He didn't have too much left to go in here, and he finished that off, and it was this... That was the right direction for that. That was the right direction. I do feel that they could have ended it where they're at the little bridge. We didn't really need the epilogue. And I feel that some of the action sequences... So much stuff gets trashed in this movie. Gringotts gets trashed by a huge white dragon. Hogwarts is worse for the wear at the end of it. I do like the fact that they had all those... Professor McGonagall had that wonderful little spot with the... You know, where she summons down all the soldiers?
Yeah, that was cool.
I liked that. The lady that they got to do to be her in that seems to have had some fun with that.
Yes, and every time I see her, I think of the worst witch.
Although, the part there where she summons all these... All the guards, I guess, that are built into the architecture,
mm-hmm.
made me think of Bedknobs and Broomsticks for some reason. Mm-hmm. It's a, like, there's a part in that one where the where the witch played by Angela Lansbury defends that house or so by reanimating all the armor that's in it.
Huh.
Yeah. So I guess that's kind of about the same. Overall, it was an okay book. Movie. A pretty good movie. I think, I'm, like I said, I was looking more forward to watching the 69-minute-long Winnie the Pooh, which we should watch at some point soon.
Mm-hmm.
We have to support good old 2D animation, and that one will be fun. Looking forward to going back to the 100-acre woods. I don't think Tigger is going to kill Dumbledore.
I'm a fan of the book.
Oh, yeah. So I think at this point, let's go ahead and... what we're going to go ahead and do is go to the feature we have today. I know this has not been the most enthusiastic thing, but you should have heard the original thing. Maybe if we get that up there, I'll put it... If I can restore it properly, I'll put it after the end credits of this one. So...
Yeah.
Yeah.
How many minutes in were we?
About 45 minutes. And we even had a why were we playing? Which was... we're not going to go into at this point. We're just going to go ahead... do you want to?
No.
No? Okay. We're tired. So what we're going to go ahead and do is we're going to go into the feature, And then, if I can restore it properly, I'll put that after the credits. So stay after these credits.
Yes. We'll have an epilogue. They will be able to tell just by the show notes and the timestamps.
Yeah, well, I always put, like, the end credits and then put end.
Yeah, but if the end credits are 40 minutes long, you know.
Well, we don't tell people the end credit, the length. That I've been hiding, like, stuff that's ridiculously long. Yeah. I just tell them the timestamp at which the end credits start.
But and then can't put they end. See how long the file is, though?
Yeah, they could. And they'll be like, why is this file 3 hours long? No, I don't have anything that's like that. But,
no
yeah.
more crying at E3.
I think I have to... Okay, I almost teared up a little bit in the Severus Snape part there.
You
because,
did.
Yeah, I kind of did. Well, Snape is... Okay, I like Luna Lovegood, but before Luna Lovegood showed up, Snape was my favorite in this.
In that book, yeah. Mm.
And then there was Sirius Black, and I was like, oh, he's cool. Then he died, and I was like, I still like Snape.
Sirius Black, meh.
Sirius Black, though, he's cool. He's cool. But yeah, let's go ahead and cue the feature, which is our Akon 22 interview with Jeremy Lee. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, the Mile High Mouth, and here is my co-conspirator.
Someone who likes to pee in hotels.
What?
Without checking in first.
Oh. Yes, the Lavetta thing. Sarah Tomasi.
Yes.
Yes.
It's been good.
It's been good. It's been real. Good night. Hi, and welcome back to Radio DMG. I'm your host, Philip Wesley, and with me today is...
Jeremy Lee.
And you're a voice actor.
I am a voice actor,
yes. You've done a little bit of radio, etc.
Yep. I worked for Radio Disney, and I do a lot of animated work for Funimation, primarily.
Primarily Funimation.
Yes.
Because of the proximity?
Yes, I live in Dallas, and they record in Flower Mound, so...
So that kind of works.
It is convenient. It is very convenient. 19 minutes away from my house.
Oh, that's pretty good. So, how did you get started in voice acting?
I started acting when I was 6 years old, and then at that time it was only needed to be a voice actor or a VO talent that you could read, because they only needed kids to read. So I could talk really fast and I could read. So that meant that I did almost all of the voiceovers for kids in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. So when I was 9, I did my first cartoon and I played a hummingbird named Eve. And then I worked on Radio Disney doing voiceover work. So I did a lot of voiceover work, which kept me busy when film stuff wasn't as prevalent when I was a kid. So working at Radio Disney, which I still do now, when I was 18, I was a DJ and I had my own show Saturday and Sunday night. So I was doing all the live stuff and national radio show, which was awesome experience. And same year, I started working at Funimation I auditioned for a show called Peach Girl and got cast as Psy. And then I guess it's been 4 years, which is crazy, that I've been working there and working on different shows. So it's very cool.
So what was it like what was your first recording session with Funimation like?
It was really different because, I mean, when I went to the audition, I brought a headshot because I do a lot of on-camera work too. So I brought a headshot and all of this stuff and... they were like, yeah, you were dressed up really nice. We were like, you're just going to be in a booth. Nobody's going to see you. So when I found out I got cast and I went to my first recording session, most voiceover work that I had worked on previously, there were no beeps. I didn't have to match flaps. And with Japanese anime, that is what it's all about. So they would say, okay, you're going to listen for the 3 beeps, and then on the 4th imaginary beep, then you're going to start talking. And I thought, What? So it took a couple of times to get into the swing of things, but it was cool. They were great.
Yeah, the whole sync point bit.
Yes.
Beep, beep, beep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Totally.
That's always great.
It's hilarious.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that
It leads to a lot of different outtakes and such.
It does, and one of the funny things that some of the engineers like to do at Funimation is when we'll do, like, I had a funny, like, I was not feeling all that great, and I could still do one of my voices, but my voice squeaked, and it sounded like a clown horn, and so that was my beeps. So it was like, and that was where I couldn't do it. I laughed. I couldn't get through that take. But that's the kind of stuff they do.
Well, at least they're paying by hour, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So it's like, you take all the time you guys need, that type of thing.
Yeah. We do have a I guess it's like a bracket of how many lines we're supposed to get through an hour. So we do have a what we're supposed to be hitting each time. So, yeah.
So are you working on anything currently for Funimation?
I am.
That you can talk about?
Well, that's always the question.
That's the question.
I worked on a show. Oh, this is my water bottle. That was loud. yeah. I worked on a show called Dance and the Vampire Bund, and I don't think that my character name is being released yet, but I can say that I'm not one of the main two girls, but I do have a pretty fun role in there, and it's something that I haven't ever played before. And there's a couple shows that I just got cast in that I'm working on right now that I wish I could talk about, and they've sworn me to secrecy, and they'll murder me if I say anything, and no, I'm kidding. But yeah, I really wish I could share, and I'm excited for later on this year when I'm allowed to talk about it, because they're really fun roles.
So you've tried radio.
Yes.
You've done radio, you're still doing radio. You've done voiceover acting, and apparently Broadway and stuff. Sorry, not Broadway, like theater stuff?
Yes.
You've done theater stuff. Mm-hmm. Have you thought about doing audiobooks or video games?
I have done, I actually did a video game Thursday before I came here, and she's selling it in the dealer's room at Acon this weekend. So I've done, and I worked on Lux Payne, so I've done a couple of video games, and I've done one or two audiobooks. Most of them are for young kids learning to read. The trick there is they have a specific word per minute that they're aiming for, and so for the 5 and 6 year olds just learning to read, it sounds like it's excruciatingly painfully slow to talk that slow, but that's their reading level. So then we have to gauge all the way up into college and stuff like that. So I've done things like that, and that's a lot of fun. And I also do some industrial stuff, like the training videos for some restaurants and things like that. So those excruciatingly painful videos that you have to sit through once you get hired at a corporation, it might be me.
So you're like, make sure to flip the burger to the left.
Yes. Most of the ones that I've been doing deal with pizza and hot wings and stuff like that. So it's like,
Pizza Hut.
Calibrate the oven to 37 point, you know, like, oh man, it's crazy. So yeah, it's a lot
of
fun.
That's always fun.
Yeah, it is. So yeah. I mean, could I work there? Probably not, because I don't really remember everything that I would have to do, so.
So then you'd have to listen to yourself.
Exactly, I'd have to listen to myself again.
Again. So, since it sounds like you started out acting and such very young, do you feel that's, if you were given a choice to, like, not act, or to, like, or to act, which would you choose? Like, let's say if you could do it all over again.
I would do it all over again, just the same. I had gone to LA a couple of times, and we dealt with the question of when I was 8 years old if I should move out to LA. And at the time, I was like, that would have been so cool if we'd moved out there. But my life would have been completely different. I wouldn't be on the path that I am now, and I wouldn't be the person that I am now with the experiences of going to high school and, you know, spending as much time with my family and having as many varied experiences in the industry. I've interned at a talent agency before. I've worked with casting directors on, so I know what it's like on the opposite side of the table. So if I wasn't going to be an actor, I'm sure I would still be in the business to some degree, because I just love every aspect of the industry. Even though it's rough and sometimes I'll get frustrated, I really do love it. So I would not change anything.
A real quick question, since you do work a lot with radio and you've done a lot of voice acting stuff, do you by any chance sing?
I do.
Okay, I was wondering, because I had to ask.
I do. This was a new development, though, because in high school I had been told not to sing because I wasn't very good at it. But I mean I can, but I'm not a great like choral singer. The more of the singing that I do is more belting, Broadway, I guess, pop, jazz, stuff like that. So, yeah, I like to sing. I did a musical for the first time this year. I played Sally in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown, which was a lot of fun. And I'll be doing another play later. And I actually have sung in a lot of anime cartoons, which was kind of cool. So, yeah.
Oh, cool. Are you planning to, like, have you done any, like, original stuff, or are you just...
I haven't. I would have to learn to play an instrument first so that I could do
stuff not
like
so
that.
Much. I'm pretty sure, like, some of these singers don't
That's
know
true.
How to play.
That's true. But I would really like to learn how to do that. I sang in a film that I did called Beyond the Farthest Star, and I'm a gothic sort of darkness. I have dark black highlights in my hair, so I guess they're low lights rather, and I wear all black and men's clothing and things like that, so she's very dark and angsty, and it's a really fun movie, but that's an original song. I didn't write it. Natalie Gore wrote it, and she's awesome, so she wrote the song and I got to sing it, so I got to sing an original song. But as far as writing my own music, I would love to learn to play the piano, you know, other than just Mary Had a Little Lamb, which is what I could play right now. And probably write my own songs. So that's something on the bucket list that I would like to do at some point.
On the bucket list.
On the bucket list. I have a little bit of time, I think.
Yeah, pretty much. Got your whole life ahead of you. Live!
Live! No, yes. I don't know. Maybe I'll, like, make it my quest for the end of the year. I don't know about that.
So, like, any particular plays or musicals right now that you'd love to be in, if you had a chance?
Ooh, that I'd love to be in. Ah, there's a long list. I love the musical Wicked. I think that's great. I love the play August Osage County. I'm probably going to be going to New York later this year, so hopefully I could check out some shows and broaden my horizons of what I'm aware of, because, you know, Wicked and, like, Legally Blonde and things like that, they're very cliche shows, but they're really fun shows. I like upbeat, fun shows. I also like the really dark. I like Jekyll and Hyde. And
that's a pretty good one.
I love that show.
You love that one?
Are
you able to sing any of the ones from it?
Maybe? I don't know. I don't know. I would have to work on some of those songs. But I do love that musical. And I'm trying to think. I'm so weird. I like really bright, fun, happy musicals, and I like really dark, angsty, emotional musicals, so...
So somewhere between, like, Rent and Annie Get Your Gun.
Yeah, right? Somewhere in there. That's a good range. So basically all of anything.
Yeah, all of anything. So since you really can't talk about the stuff that you're doing in Funimation.
Yes.
Anything you can talk about in regards to, say, Radio Disney, or are you going to be on any of the Disney original movies they have coming up?
I wish. That would be cool. Disney Channel and Radio Disney aren't necessarily connected as far as the talent crossover, because Radio Disney is produced out of Dallas and Disney Channel is produced out of L.A. But I will be working on a film called The Home with Michelle Rodriguez and Brian Cox and Ed Asner and Cloris Leachman later in the year, and I'm working on a film called Archaic Redemption, which is a zombie werewolf sort of post-apocalypse film, but it's very character driven, and I know this is going to upset a lot of people, but the zombies do have personalities and they do talk, so it's a different spin on things, and I'm not a zombie, I'm a human. So I'm one of the few humans in that. And Beyond the Farthest Star should be coming out. I think they were saying maybe close to Christmas. And
sounds like a Christmas movie.
Yeah. It's a dark movie with a little bit of a Christmas twist. And I did a web series called Throwing Stones. So we did the first season that premiered on Mingle Media and Coldcast, and it did really, really well. So we've got our fingers crossed for a potential season 2. which would be really graphic and gory, and there would be a lot of death. So my fingers are crossed that if we got to do a season two, that my character, Robin, who is a jock, would not die. That would be awesome.
It's like get eaten alive by things.
Oh, I would hope not.
So I've noticed that, like, actually, our audience can't see it, but you're wearing a lot of blue, or like, what is that stone?
Turquoise.
Is that your birthstone?
It's not. My birthstone is a ruby. I don't know why today I felt
very turquoisey.
I was a very turquoisey person, and I like turquoise a lot. It's you know, if it were my birthstone, that would be cool. But I'm a ruby. My birthday's actually next month in July. I'll be 23. Oh.
Congratulations and happy early birthday.
Yeah, on my birthday I'll be working. I'll be rehearsing for a play that I'm doing here in Dallas called Seven's a Crowd, and I will be playing Envy. So it's a comedy about the seven deadly sins. So I am a sin and I am Envy. Wearing lots of lime green.
Jamie didn't get to be Envy in Full Metal Alchemist.
Oh my gosh, that would have been so cool.
Yeah. So have there been shows that you've tried out for that you didn't get, that you kind of wish you did?
Yeah, definitely. But then once
I heard... Any specific ones?
I don't know. There's a lot of shows that I really love the concepts for, and I really love what they're about, and I love the characters. And I was like, man, it would be so great if I got to work on this. And then I see the cast, and I hear what their work is, and I'm like, I could not wish this any differently. You know, they are so great as a unit, and I love the work that they do, and I don't want to change it because they made the show. I like it the way they did it, so even though I would have loved to have been a part of it, I wouldn't change it. So I mean it's kind of a catch-22, and at the same time there's been a lot of shows that I've wanted to get so badly, and I got, and it was so exciting. So it works out. So
what's your current current favorite role that you've been in?
I don't know. Lizzie in Black Butler was a lot of fun because I got to have a British accent, and I've always wanted to do something with a British accent. Now my quest is to do something on camera with a British accent. Patty is a lot of fun just because she's wacky and she has no rules, and I kind of got to let loose in the booth. I really liked Mai in Ghost Hunt because I love paranormal stuff. I love ghosts and supernatural and stuff like that. And the character was pretty similar to me, so that was cool. I actually write a lot of scripts that deal with a lot of paranormal and things like that. So maybe I'll start producing some of those too. That would be cool. So yeah.
Yeah.
And villains are always fun.
So do you believe in ghosts?
I don't know. I kind of want to believe in the idea of ghosts. I think it's more fun to believe that there's a mystery and there's something out there other than just us.
Of course.
I think that's way more fun. Because if it's just us, you know.
It's a little boring.
Cool. To think that there are like 18 ghosts in the room with us right now doing this interview is a lot cooler. You know?
They were the previous interviewees. No, just kidding.
Now I'm scared.
No, I'm kidding. It's like, that's Kyle LaBear over there.
Hey, Kyle.
Of course. So, you're going to be working with some heavy hitters in the industry in that upcoming movie.
Yeah, like in Cloris Home.
Cloris Leachman, Ed Asner.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you still geek out a little bit when you meet somebody?
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
Yeah.
I worked on Temple Grandin with Claire Danes, which won an Emmy. And when I first met her, she said, "Hi, it's nice to meet you. I'm Claire Danes." And of course, you know, I kind of have to calm down, cool myself off, and be not the nerd who's like, "I know exactly who you are. I could list every film you've ever been in. I love you. You're awesome." And instead, I'm just like, "I'm Jeremy. It's nice to meet you."
It's like, you're so like, cool. He's like, "You were just great in Romeo and Juliet."
Oh my gosh, yeah. You're brilliant in everything. And you're going to win an Emmy for this movie. If I were psychic, I could be able to tell you that. Like, so. Yeah. Yeah.
The spirits told you.
Exactly. My friends, the spirits. They follow me around. So
they talk to them. The voices in the head.
That's a role I need to play. That would be cool.
Hopefully, you'll be able to play something like that. Especially if Funimation gets some of these shows that are coming out, like Dragon Crisis or Puella Magi Madoka Magica.
That would be so cool.
That would be pretty great if they got that.
It would be awesome.
If they got... have you seen that one yet?
I haven't.
Oh, you haven't seen Puella Magica?
I've heard a little bit about it, yeah. But I haven't seen it.
It's kind of like Cardcaptor Sakura meets Berserk.
Nice.
So,
nice.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be so much fun.
So, where do you go... Where do you find the vocal depth for, like... When you're assigned a character, mm-hmm. do you just go with what a lot of the direction, or do you have a... How do you form how that character's going to sound?
When we go to auditions, we're given a giant binder with a couple pictures of the character and then a paragraph, like a synopsis about them, what they're going to do in the show, and then a couple lines and how they relate to the show and how they relate to the other characters. So, based on that, you kind of get a feel for them, and then you go in to speak with the director, and he'll give you the direction that he's taking with the show. And since I've worked there for a while, it's nice that the directors kind of know my voice and know kind of how they might want to shift me in what direction they want to take me. And we also watch the Japanese, and I'll research the show and kind of see how I would relate to this character or how I can maintain the integrity of the brilliance that the Japanese created, because we wouldn't be producing it if it weren't a great show. So we always want to remain true to that when we're producing it. And just getting to play. I think one of the characters for a villain that I got, they just called me in, and it was in Nabari. For some reason, when I watched the clip in Japanese and I heard her voice and how it translated into my voice, in my brain it was like Moaning Myrtle from Harry Potter.
Ah.
So that was how my brain had like compartmentalized that. So it was a little darker and a little edgier and a little deeper, but there was an element of Moaning Myrtle from Harry Potter in the inspiration for that character, oddly enough. So, yeah.
So how many of these conventions have you been to?
Normally, I'll go to like one, maybe two a year, and that's not my choice. That's just, how it's happened.
Scheduling.
I had a crazy thing with confusion and websites, sometimes scheduling. I shifted representation and things like that. So that definitely affected how people could contact me to see if I wanted to go to a convention. But this year, I think I'm going to like six or seven. So that's it's way cool. I was in North Carolina last week, weekend before last, and then Ohio, and now back at home this weekend. And next month I'll be back in Ohio. So it's always nice getting to play around and see everybody and go check out the various dealers' rooms and artist alleys. And I stalk the artists here at the convention. So I'm a big fan of artists, so I will follow them forever.
That's a little frightening.
Isn't it?
Like, even after you die, you'll haunt them.
I know. I love art. I'm going to college right now, and I think I'm going to minor in art history. I thought I was going to major in it, but I think I'm going to minor in art history so that at some point I could be a, art and historical film consultant on films and things like that.
So you want to be a critic, essentially?
No, I would like, if I wasn't going to be able to act in a project and I was going to do some stuff behind the scenes, I would... be the person that would say, like, this isn't really right for this time period. This painting is more accurate for this time period with this frame to make sure that everything fits with the time period of the film that they're producing while they're on set. So
what would your major be?
I think I'm probably going to major in some sort of communications journalism type thing, because I also really like journalism and writing. And minor in art history. So I love history, so I get a little bit of history, a little bit of art, a little bit of writing, and communications. I talk for a living, so it's perfect.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Do what you love.
Exactly. I was going to get a film major and do that route, but I was like, that's what I do for a living, and I can get that experience being on set. So why not get something else that's just going to broaden my repertoire even more? So that's what I'm going to do.
So since you've been to many conventions, what's let's go with experiences, best and then worst experience.
I actually haven't had a worst experience at a convention, honestly. They've all been really, really good.
No crazy fans be like, I liked you in that movie, like Sergeant Frog or Talia.
I guess there's always, they're always pretty cool about it. I mean, I have had people that, somebody, and it wasn't crazy. It was kind of funny. I was sitting at an autograph table and somebody's like, it says here that you play Patty in Soul Eater. And I said, yeah, I do. And she's like, prove it. I'm like, okay. So I said a couple lines and I laughed and she goes, I mean, it kind of sounds like her, but it's louder in the anime. And I was like, I don't have a mic on me. So it was funny. And then later on she goes, yeah, you really do look like that girl who they say plays her on the internet. They have pictures of her. I was like, it's because it is me.
It's like, I don't believe you. They're like, I'm sorry, I don't have sound engineering stuff. I can't move this exactly. up a little bit.
That's what somebody said when I was telling the story today. Somebody goes, yeah, because you carry a soundboard with you. I was
all
like,
the
exactly.
time.
You know,
all the time.
It's in my purse.
On the iPhone. Yeah. There's an app for it.
Exactly. There probably will be. We say that now as a joke. I give them a year. There'll be a soundboard on the app.
But it won't be compatible with the current one.
That's
It'll be
true.
Compatible with
That's
the next
true.
One.
It'll be the iPhone 8. In a year, we're going to have the iPhone 8. Get on it, guys. I just set the precedent for you.
Absolutely.
Mac is going to hate me. I'm kidding.
Steve Jobs is going to show up at your house.
You said we're only going to be at the iPhone 6 by next year. Sorry.
Happens.
Yeah, you know. I still don't have my iPhone 4 yet, or my iPad, so I'm happens. Behind in the Mac world.
So, you did work on a DS game, Lux Payne.
I
what
did.
Did you do for it?
I played Nami, who, this was so long ago, but she was kind of a psychic with animals, which was cool. Again, with the psychic and the spiritual and the paranormal, I was like, yes, please, I want to do this. She had her little animal companion. It was a really fun game that I'm pretty sure I bought the game. I haven't played it all the way through yet, but it really is one of those storytelling games. So for people that like wanna go, you know, shoot people and, you know, things like that, they should probably go play LA Noire, which the graphics on it are out of this world amazing. But so it's not a game like that, but it's fun. It's a good storytelling game.
Kinda like a 999 or the Phoenix Wright series.
Yeah.
Yeah, have you played the Phoenix Wright series?
I haven't, but I've heard about it.
Check it out.
My brother's the big gamer in our family.
Oh, okay.
So I have my DS, and I love Pirates of the Caribbean, and I love Indiana Jones, and I love Iron Man. So those are my three obsessive, crazy properties, I guess. So I have the Lego Pirates of the Caribbean that I think is awesome, and Lego Indiana Jones. So, you know, Legoland.
Yeah,
so cool.
Lego.
What is wrong with Lego?
Nothing
it's a
is wrong with
forever.
Lego.
Yeah.
No, they've done so much with that particular franchise.
They have. It's crazy.
Would given the opportunity, would you be in one of their games?
Oh heck yeah!
It's like
I would be like if they asked, it would be a whole half a millisecond before I screamed on the phone and said thank you, please, yes. I'll be there tomorrow. Do you want to shoot in Italy? Because I'll record in Italy. I will fly myself there. I would be so excited. That would be awesome. Yeah, we went to Legoland a couple of years ago. And I mean, yes, I'm going to be 23, but at Disneyland and Legoland, any sort of theme park where there's children, I'm a giant kid.
It happens.
A giant kid.
Well, Legos bring out the kid in everybody.
They totally do.
They do.
They're
Most
great.
Most people won't admit it. But they're like, oh, Legos. No.
As they're building a giant Yoda under the table.
Yeah.
I don't have Legos.
Legos? No, Gears of War, that type of thing. Then somebody puts out Lego Halo, and you're like,
Yeah, exactly. That's coming, I'm sure. That's
eventually.
Another one I'm going to predict.
We're going to have, like, Lego Sin
Halo.
City.
Lego World of Warcraft. It's going to be great.
That would be...
That would be an
crazy.
Adventure.
Yeah,
it would.
That would be pretty crazy. They charge you per brick.
That would be hilarious.
They're red brick farmers out in China. They make their prisoners. It's like, okay, this section of the prison is doing blue bricks today. This
and
one's
this
doing green.
Yellow bricks. And that's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that would be such a good game. We should contact Lego.
Yes, definitely.
Get a piece of this creation. You know how much it's going to cost. It's going to make millions. Billions.
So, of course, yeah.
Yeah, it's Lego. Come on.
So, Where do you see yourself in about 5 years?
Oh, man. In 5 years, I hope to be working, continuing to do what I love, doing more film work, doing more animation stuff. I would love to work and travel overseas and shoot a film or record a series that took place overseas. I would love to start producing my own stuff, finishing some scripts and producing things, and I don't know. And the possibilities are endless. Whatever falls in my lap, if it's right time, right place, right opportunity, I'll do it. Because I mean, like I said, I love every aspect of this industry, and I loved getting to play on the radio. I would totally do that again in a heartbeat. Yeah, I don't know. Ooh. It would just be, everything's open. That'd be cool.
Yeah, so, like, hopefully it'll be something like, it'll be a supernatural thing in Italy or something,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, oh my gosh.
You'll be in, like, the last Twilight movie or something.
You totally named it. That would be amazing. Supernatural in Italy. I would be there. I will live there. It would be amazing. As something like the Da Vinci Code, you know, where they have art and history and supernatural and religious and all this craziness, that mystery stuff, man, I would be in heaven. So that would be a blast.
So we could mention something like, okay, religion. I noticed you mentioned religious.
Yeah.
Are you a believer or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I would call myself a spiritual person, and one of my things about religion is that I'm so interested in everybody's belief system, and that I research a lot of religions, and that's actually one of the films that I'm working on right now. But the way I believe in things is, I'm like, you know, whatever works for everybody, if that gets you through the day, that works for you. It might not work for me, but I'm gonna respect you and your belief system, and learn more about it, because I can't make a judgment on it. Yeah. if I don't know it. And I think there's a lot of valid points and belief systems in every religion. That's why it's functioning. That's why people believe in it, you know. So, yeah, religion's a very interesting interesting beast, in my opinion. So,
interesting beast.
It's very cool.
That's the box score right there. Yeah. Religion, it's an
interesting beast. Dun, it's a t-shirt. Dun, dun. It's going to be great.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah.
So, yes, that's been nice doing the interview with you.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, are you having a good time here at ACON?
I'm having a blast.
Having a blast.
So much fun.
You'll be back next year?
I hope so. If they want me back, I will be back. I mean, I live here, so it's just a bonus.
It's kind of like, yeah, just, you
it's
don't
a,
have to worry about
it. It's a vacation away from home. I mean, I left my phone charger at home, so...
A vacation from your phone charger.
Yeah.
I'm sure it misses you.
It does. I know it does, because I miss it so much. So I think my grandparents are actually going to be bringing it to me, which is the other bonus of being at home and having grandparents that live across the street from your parents. So
that's always
it's
good.
It's like everybody loves Raymond, except it's functional.
Yeah.
We don't hate each other.
it's a good, family is a very good thing.
Oh, absolutely. I have a great family. Yeah. Everybody's really close knit, so that's awesome, and very supportive.
Mm, so. That's always good. It's good to have support.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. One more thing, actually.
Yeah.
I've asked this of the other guests and stuff too. Now, at these conventions, a lot of people get to the conventions. They're outgoing and everywhere. They're really bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, that type of deal. But when they get out of the convention, they just kind of clam up. They're very almost antisocial.
The guests?
Would you? No. The people who go.
The
convention goers. Any tips on how that convention goers can bring that energy that they have at the convention out to their normal everyday lives?
Well, because everybody, like you said, everybody's so excited to be here. And I feel like, I mean, I was a nerd in school. And so I feel like that may be part of it for a lot of people. They just don't feel like they fit in I guess, the quote-unquote outside world, because here at the con, everybody's awesome, and everybody's supportive and understanding, and so, I mean, I guess everybody seems to be so confident, and everybody knows who they are, and I admire a lot of the cosplayers, because to have the confidence to get dressed up and own your character and all that stuff, I think it's really awesome. And to take that confidence and see them so confident, and then, you know, if you were to see them outside the convention, like you said, they're quiet and they don't have that same radiance that they did at the convention. It's like, bottle that confidence that you had, because it's all you. You created it. And, you know, just own it. Go be, you know, all Fonz, you know, full yeah. metal out at school. You know, hey, if that's what works to get you through the day and feeling confident, do it. I think it really just comes down to being, because my whole thing in high school was I was afraid that people wouldn't accept me because I was a little weird or I didn't necessarily fit in. And once I figured out, like, it doesn't matter what anybody thinks. It just matters about how I think of myself and how I perceive myself and how I want to present myself. I think once everybody feels that way, it gets a whole lot easier.
Oh, definitely.
So, yeah.
So, real quick question.
Yeah.
Because, like, we still have a little bit of time.
Yeah, totally.
Yes. What's the best cosplay you've seen so far this
Oh,
week?
Man. Well, today was actually, I'm very biased in that the characters that I've played already top other people because we have a bond. So when I woke up this morning and I got off the elevator, I saw the entire cast of Black Butler, including Lizzie. That was amazing. And then about 5 minutes later, I saw the entire cast of Soul Eater, including Patty, and that was awesome. And then 15 minutes later, I saw Rhode at my autograph table. So it was like, this is the day for cosplay.
Oh, yeah.
And they all looked awesome. And then I saw somebody who is then cosplayed as Excalibur, and that was pretty amazing. Excalibur is not an easy cosplay. That was impressive. No. So
it's not an easy song either.
No, it's not, but actually, it's hilarious.
Oh, could I get you to sing the song?
Oh, God.
The Excalibur song?
I could not do it justice.
Oh.
It's so good, though. I think when I first saw it, I was like, from the United King, I'm looking for him, I'm going to California? What does this song even mean?
Yeah.
Nothing, but you can't get it out of your head.
But can you sing it just a little bit? Just a little
Excalibur. That's the best I'll do. I can't sound like Excalibur. It's too low for me.
Too low.
It's too low. Yeah.
Too low.
Yeah. No, it's very cool. I love Excalibur.
Ah.
I actually made my grandmother buy a keychain of Excalibur.
Ah.
It's still on her purse.
Of course.
Yes, most definitely.
Well. It's been a pretty great interview.
It's been a blast. Thank you so much.
No problem. And, let's go ahead and say goodnight to our studio audience. Well,
good night, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. And, oh my gosh, we have a caller. It's the ghost!
Oh, must be. I suppose so. Well, I guess let's go ahead and wrap this up. This is your host, Philip Wesley, for Radio DMG. And I'm here with...
Jeremy Lee.
And good night.
Night.
Welcome to today's edition of Radio DMG. I am your host, Philip Wesley, and I'm here with...
Someone drinking a glass of water.
Someone drinking a glass of water. And who would that someone be?
Oh, you know. What other chicks do you have on the show?
Well, let's see. Today we've got Jeremy Lee. We had, what was that? Leslie Wilkerson.
Lisa Wilkerson.
Lisa Wilkerson, I mean. Vanessa Artiga, some other people. We've had people on.
Peter S. Beagle?
He's not female.
Anymore.
Well, the same could be said about H-Bomb. Oh! Nah.
Just hear him sing. You would have doubts, too.
No. Oh, goodness. Anyways, we have with us...
Sarah Tomasi.
The infamous Sarah Tomasi. And, well, today's episode, we're going to have a little bit of, we're going to talk a little bit about the new Harry Potter movie. So there are Harry Potter spoilers galore. If you don't want to hear any Harry Potter 7 Part 2 spoilers, then go ahead and check the timestamps and then skip on to the interview if you like. Of course, before we get dive deep, like into Harry Potter 7.2 spoilers, we're going to go ahead and dive into, well, let's see, what have you been playing?
Zelda. Ocarina of Time, mm-hmm. 3DS, and also lots and actually a lot more lately this week of Link's Awakening.
Have you ever? 3DS. Did you ever beat them on when they originally came out?
I don't think I've ever beaten a Zelda game.
You've never beaten a Zelda game.
I always get to right to the last boss, and then before killing Ganon or Ganondorf or whatever his name is.
You just kind of stop?
I'm like, well, I need to finish doing this.
You get distracted. Because
I feel like if I beat the game, I can't go back and get, like, for example, such as the Iraq. I'm joking.
The what?
You know that chick that was on Miss America? She's like, just kept talking nonsense anyway.
Oh, well, yeah.
Like in that, not Spirit Tracks, Phantom Hourglass. I wanted to collect all the pieces for the ship, so I got all the way up to the last dungeon, and I'm like, well, I can't go in now, because I need to finish this. And then another game made it into my DS, and I never beat it. Same thing happened with Minish Cap. Actually, that happened twice, because I, in the last 3 months or so, I replayed Zelda Minish Cap, and I got almost as far. Fewer figurines this time, but I didn't beat it. But right now, I think I'm in the 6th or 7th dungeon of Link's Awakening.
Yeah, you're in the Face Shrine in Link's Awakening.
I'll beat that one. That one's...
Yeah, because that one's pretty good. The only thing about it is, like, the opening start menu to... Yeah,
that's yeah, the start the button is not very good on the 3DS. That's basically my only complaint.
About the 3DS?
Yeah.
I think they...
I don't like that raised. And the start... Okay... And the power button is where the start button should be. And if you hit the power button in the middle of a game, you lose all that save.
Yeah. If you didn't save. I think that they need to... If it were up to me, I would have them put, like, the power button up in, like, a corner somewhere on the top thing. Because, like, that makes more sense to me for them to put it there.
Yeah. And I hear a lot of people that transition from the DS Lite. Skip the DSi generation, just transition from the DS Lite to the 3DS. Keep turning off the wireless and turning it on whenever they want to turn on and off the system.
Yeah, that's one of those weird design things. There's some stuff like...
I don't know why they need to change the button configuration for every iteration of the...
Yeah, they don't need to. Select and start should be under the X, Y, and B and A buttons.
Just like Game Boy. It's especially confusing when you're playing a Game Boy or Game Boy Color game.
The home button. I like where the home button is, but I wish that they'd... What they need to do is make that home button... they need to combine all the little lights into some little light thing. Like how it is on like the DSi, where it's those little three bars. There's lights all over the right-hand side of it.
It's like five different lights on the 3DS. We need really more and lower the... Won't it lower the...
It would probably lower... Life? No, it'd probably lower cost if they use less lights. Well, there's a couple... I think there's stuff that they can fix with another iteration. But, yeah, what do you think of Ocarina of Time?
It's pretty. I think I've gotten further in this one than I did when I played it as a kid.
Yeah, I going back into it, I was like, so much of this is so... Because I remember going, like, when I got to the Forest Temple, I realized I forgot everything about the Forest Temple. And even though I beat Legend of Zelda Link's Awakening last year... In Japanese, 2 years ago, I think, in Japanese. And then, again, because I'm going to be working on some reviews of it, I'm thinking, like, coming up, I'm going to be doing literally a Zelda week. I'm going to finish up a bunch of the reviews because I have the NES Classics for Legend of Zelda 1 and 2.
Oh, Frank will love this episode because he loves Zelda.
But then I'll finish up Link to the Past on the Game Boy Advance, then reviews of it. So I'm going to do the first five, all in one
quick question.
Week.
Okay, so Link's Awakening, was that the third Zelda game or the
fourth?
Fourth Zelda game. So there was, wait, don't tell me there was... Legend of Zelda.
Mm-hmm.
Link's Adventure.
Adventure of Link.
Whatever. And then there was that crappy one that everyone likes on the Super Nintendo.
Link to the Past.
Yeah, everyone seems to like that one.
It's actually a pretty good game, but I feel that Link to the Past... I feel that...
The beginning is so long.
Link's Awakening was the beginning of a new era for the Legend of Zelda series, because the 1, 2, and 3 are kind of...
Meh.
They're kind of, they don't really have much of an atmosphere to them. The fourth one, they improved the story. They actually made you care about some of the characters in it. Because, like, in, say, Link to the Past, when the kid with the flute dies, you don't care about that. You don't. You don't care about anything Link to the Past. But in Link's Awakening, they're like... Marin is kind of like where they're like, hey, let's go ahead and make people care about a non-playable character. Let's make the people in there be the focus of it. That's why Link's Awakening is more personal than some of the other ones. Then with Ocarina of Time, they figured, well, we're going to be adding a new dimension to this. We need to get the atmosphere right. And I feel like going back into it, like with the Fire Temple, the Water Temple, the Forest Temple, especially the last half of that game, after when you become an adult, the way it's put together is they took the idea of Legend of Zelda from like the original thing, the open world aspects of the first game, combined it with the storytelling from the fourth game, and they made you care about some of those. And I think they went even a step further with it with Majora's Mask, which is, aside from like... I would say that my favorite of the 3D ones were Majora's Mask, Twilight Princess, then Ocarina of Time. I know people deride Twilight Princess because of the stuff with the wolf, but for me, that's great. But, myself, I've been playing, I was playing a bit more of Cave Story, and
in that one, and I need your help.
You need help in it? Yeah, I'll help you with that one.
I have the bubble gun.
I also picked up Game & Watch Gallery, which came out this last Thursday, and oh my gosh, it's
$3.
It's $3, but it's four or five. It's like, okay, there's Fire, Octopus, Manhole, and Oil Panic.
And Fire is your favorite, right?
Fire is my favorite of those. Just as difficult as I remember it being, but when you get into that little groove, especially with like the older ones, you get into that little zone where everything around you just disappears and you're acting on instinct with stuff. And that's really what, to me, that's pure gaming. Yep. But speaking of...
Yeah. I think next I will have to play, once I beat these two games, I'll have to finally delve further into Spirit Tracks, because I played maybe a half hour and then put it down.
I played a bit of Spirit Tracks and then realized that, you know, I've got other games that, you know, I think that, like, when Chrono Trigger came out for the Nintendo DS, that kind of, like, I still carry that one with me, because sometimes you just gotta take that out there and play. I don't know how many times I've played through it.
Lost your game card.
For Chrono Trigger DS?
Yes.
Buy another one?
Yeah. After crying in a corner for a week.
Well, no, I'd go buy another one. It's $19.99.
No, it's $15.
$15? Well, heck, I should buy a spare.
At East Arlington right now, but...
I should buy a spare. Actually, if you haven't bought Chrono Trigger for the Nintendo DS and you want to...
What are you doing?
Oh, we're trying to keep the snits... We're trying to keep the safe for work.
Oops.
Oh, I know what I'm going to do. I downloaded a pack of Navi sounds. Hey, listen!
I like it.
And we're going to put that in the place of the word that you said.
Oh, I thought you were going to put that in the background music, just like no. Cross-border gaming.
Oh, my gosh.
Just so every once in a while, hey!
Oh, hey! No, it has to be techno music.
Wow! Hello, kitty.
Hey,
that would be awesome.
Oh, no? But yeah, what I'm going to do is I'm going to custom bleep. So that's going to be like a, hey! So if I say a bad word, like...
ball sack?
Nah, I don't think we really...
Like, you know, like an F-bomb or something. But, yeah, okay, so we have that one.
Have I been playing anything else?
Oh, you've been playing on the PS3? You've been playing Blur.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. And, we Katamari got a PlayStation Forever. 3, so I've been playing a lot of... Switching out, actually. I'll play an hour or an hour and a half of Blur, and then I'll play an hour of Katamari Damacy, or Forever. Katamari Forever, and then I'll switch back to Blur, and I haven't touched...
Some of the other stuff in there. We
Infamous or Infamous 2. And I know we're bad. Portal 2, and I haven't touched... and I did play a little bit of Marvel vs. Capcom 3, which is freaking awesome.
Yep, that was a pretty good... Swear. No, he didn't. No Navi for that.
That was cool.
Actually, I think that'd be pretty great. We should do... And we should do safer work versions of these. Go back and re-edit some of these. Put
Chris
up a safe... Yes. Yes, the Chris Patton share is too much. He'll be like... And then the... Hey! Listen! It'll be great.
Mm-hmm.
All right. But, I've been playing a little... I played a little bit of a PS3 as well. We have so many PS1 games on it. But I downloaded the demo for Catherine, which we still need to pre-order. Yeah, I know we're bad. But Catherine's interesting. It reminds me of Precipice. Art style Precipice on the 3DS... Sorry, on the DSiWare. It's one of those games for DSiWare that... I think it's like $5. It's $4.99. It's $5. So, It's pretty great. It's one of those where it's a... You push blocks and the idea is to keep climbing higher. Some of the action sequences in Catherine require you to climb up in some type of ascending staircase. And the idea, in order to climb it, you have to hang off blocks and pull blocks and push blocks so that you can get up there. Well, usually something is horrifying is chasing you, like a chainsaw-wielding baby or a version of his, of one of the Catherines that's holding like a giant fork. It's an M-rated game, so there's quite a lot of language to it.
Yay.
And some of the... I know. Lots of navvies.
I remember the first M-rated game I bought. It was at a GameStop, and I got carded. Can you guess what game?
I'm thinking.
I'm not that old, so...
M-rated game. You got carded. What system was it on?
GameCube?
Hey!
They actually made M-rated games on GameCube.
Oh no, that's a Navi.
I know.
Oops. But yeah. Resident Evil?
Which number?
0?
Have I ever played that game?
No. The first one, right?
It was Resident Evil 4.
4? Oh. You didn't. I got Resident Evil Remake. That's one that they really... You know, I liked what they did with Resident Evil Mercenaries. Bringing that over, that's a cute idea. But if they really wanted to be cool, they could have put some of the GameCube Resident Evils on there in a way. I mean, I would definitely play Resident Evil, the remake that they put on the GameCube, on a 3DS. That'd be kind of great.
I think it's a bit early in
the life cycle.
For anthologies.
I know. I just want... There's a bunch of stuff where I'm like, I want a remake of this. But give me my Final Fantasy VII 3DS so we can drown in the PlayStation 3 owner's tears. Wait.
You know, I don't actually use the 3D that often with Zelda.
I like it for the cutscenes, certainly. I actually have it at half on most of those. Also, when I'm aiming with, like, the...
Hookshot?
Oh, the aiming in there is amazing.
Oh, yeah, that's nice with the...
Yeah, the gyroscope motion sensing thingies. Yeah.
Oh, and just for the record, I am right before the boss in the Fire Temple as an adult.
Hmm. So. Volvesia, I think that's his name. Thing that eats Gorons.
I don't know, I haven't seen him yet. I was like, oh, I need to get back to work, so.
Yeah.
I've been playing on my lunch break. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, what have we been watching? We saw a movie recently. We actually saw it at...
Well, we watched the first episode of Ride Back, which was really good. Oh, the
first two episodes.
I said two.
Yeah, first two episodes of Ride Back.
First
that one's good.
That was good.
And they did good job on the dub there, Funimation. Anyways, we did see a movie on, what was it, a midnight thing on... Well, it was technically Friday morning
Thursday
because
night,
it's midnight. So,
12,
or Thursday, 10, yeah.
Yeah, Friday morning.
We went and saw, what did we go and see? What was that? Oh, man.
Harold and
Kumar 7? No, not really. Where they go to Hogwarts. I think that... Wait. It was Eclipse. Yeah, Eclipse Part 1.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Eclipse Part 1. Totally. Actually, I think we saw Harry Potter 7 Part 2. And, what did you think? We saw it in 2D to begin with.
Well, it was really good and captivating.
And then what happened? The first
time we went and saw it.
Yeah.
Then until the power went out.
Yeah.
In the theater.
The power went out in the theater, but it happened.
We got about, what, two-thirds?
Yeah, about two-thirds. It was right where the giant snake, Nagina, murders Snape. Snape's dying, and he's leaning back there, and Harry Potter comes in through the little thing there, and he places his hand
to stop the bleeding.
Places his hand on his neck, and then everything flashes and lights go on. I was like,
"Well, the emergency lights go on."
Yeah, the emergency lights go on. Apparently, somebody at XL Energy or whatnot hit a power line and knocked out an entire block, which the Aurora Century 16 theaters are on.
Oh, in that mall we got kicked out of a few months back?
Yeah.
Yeah, that one was out of power, too, because that's across the street.
Yeah, they called the police.
Yes.
They called the police, and about five or six police cars showed up. They literally had to,
There was over 1,700 people
in that
four
theater.
Different theaters.
And I think there's eight staff members in there total?
The woman at the theater today said that it took them over an hour to evacuate the building when policy is 10 minutes.
Yeah, because people were just like, do we go? Do we stay or do we go now?
Well, you couldn't hear anything that any staff member was saying. It was just
and when they showed
saying,
up.
Oh, they're asking us to leave. What? I don't want to leave.
Yeah. At that point, it was like the staff would show up, okay, you gotta leave, and they just vanish.
It's 2 in the morning.
That's where the vanishing staff comes from. But that's where the vanishing staff comes from. Anyways, we ended up leaving and then going back in to see if we could find somebody in the staff. So we could talk about what we need to do to be reimbursed for this happening. The thing, though, is I can understand why people were up. Like, people really were kind of upset when the cops showed up. We were leaving the parking lot when the cops started showing up en masse. But
when we first stepped out of the theater.
First thing you smell, what was it?
Marijuana. Well,
yeah. Goodness.
What do you expect here?
Yeah, it's Colorado. We just come out there and like, yep. Something, yep. There's some Sorcerer's Stone going around.
Yeah. So these types of people seem to be a little bit more paranoid than they should be around cops.
Yeah. I've noticed that, which is kind of weird because for something that's supposed to help people people relax, it really makes people horribly paranoid.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, well. Ay. They just need some food.
Yeah. So we went back in the theater and we found a staff member who I think he was the projectionist because he was wearing a random t-shirt.
Yeah, he was.
And he said just to bring our tickets back in the next day. So yesterday evening, we went back to the theater, and
we brought our receipt and the tickets. I also brought the receipt for
the receipt from Fandango, and you also brought.
I brought the
the receipt from concessions.
Yeah, I brought the concession receipt where I paid how much for the Sour Patch Kids.
I can't believe I left him alone. I went and got seats on Thursday night, and I left him alone to get popcorn and pop, and he goes and buys a little box of Sour Patch Kids for $3.75.
It called me.
Why? $4?
It's kind of like, okay,
we could have stopped at Walgreens and gotten
Voldemort
4 pounds
made me do it.
Of candy for that price.
We could have put it in the infamous bag. I know we're in that. I know, but I brought that in there. And I even included the concession stand stuff. And the lady gave us how many free ticket passes?
Four. And that includes 3D movies.
Yeah.
Which are generally $8.50.
Yeah. They're generally kind of expensive.
Well.
Yeah.
3D tickets are $2 more expensive. Yeah. But, okay, a lot of people listening will be like, holy cow, where did you see a movie for that cheap? When we actually went and saw the movie, I paid $6.50 for each ticket.
Yeah.
And if you go during the day for a matinee, it's $4.50.
I know. Some people in, like, the larger cities are like, why is it so cheap?
Yeah. No, at the AMC, you have to pay $10 for a regular 2D ticket and $12 for a 3D.
That's why we don't go to the AMC.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyways, so we went and saw it again tonight in 3D. And
I wouldn't have. I'm glad I didn't have to pay for the 3D because it was not worth it.
It was not the 3D for this one. Okay, here's the thing. 3D works when you use it to establish depth. The 3DS uses it to establish depth. Also, one thing about establishing depth, you do not have to blur foreground or background objects when you're doing that. I mean, go look at some of the best stuff that works the best in 3D, like Coraline or Up. I've seen those in 3D. I went and saw How to Train Your Dragon in 3D. Rio. I saw Avatar. We didn't see Rio in 3D.
Oh, no.
We didn't. No, we didn't.
Oh, yeah. No, we didn't.
No, because I was saying, hey, this one would work really well in 3D.
It was $11 for a 2D ticket.
Ooh.
Remember?
Yeah. Because, like, we had that one free pass.
I had one free pass, but I had to use that theater.
Now, the reason why some computer animation works so well in 3D is because they don't blur foreground or background objects in 3D. You film it all straight. You don't blur it. You don't have to blur it.
There's no blurring in the 3DS, is there?
No, there isn't.
Clear and crisp.
They use clear and crispness.
And I don't have to wear those stupid glasses.
Yeah, because the glasses are really kind of annoying. Yeah. I forgot how annoying those are.
Well, they're especially annoying when you're already wearing lenses.
Yeah.
So having two pairs of glasses on, I kept having to push it up my nose. Because it's two pairs of plastic glasses for me.
Yeah. I feel that, you know, you do not need to blur foreground or background objects. Just leave it nice and crisp. That's what James Cameron did in many of the sequences in Avatar. And that's what you see a lot of in animated stuff. Coraline was really good for this. Because not only was it filmed in 3D, like the new Harry Potter film was filmed in 3D, but they blurred stuff in the foreground and background when they didn't need to. You use the 3D so that I'm looking into kind of a window box. You need to give the depth to your backgrounds and your foregrounds, and blurring doesn't work. There are points in that movie, though, where the 3D actually seemed to work well.
What point?
I would say the part where they do, like, right after the part where it stopped the first time for us, and they go back into that past.
Oh, yeah.
That was great.
The memory sequence.
Oh, yes. After Harry Potter uses one of them, he catches one of Severus Snape's tears.
In a vial. And didn't they change that? Because I thought in the book that Severus, when he died, he took his wand and took his memory, and it was in a puddle on the ground.
Yeah.
Because I remember an illustration at the beginning of the next chapter.
Yeah. That's what he did. He used that at that point. I'm like, then, you know, it kind of goes to show that the last Harry Potter book was really badly written. A lot of the stuff there doesn't work. And the stuff that they changed works better. Because, like, okay, you can draw out memories with a wand in the book. And this one here, Severus Snape, he has these little glistening tears.
And he tells Harry to capture them.
Like, yeah, then his final... Yeah, to catch them. Then his final words are like, your eyes are like your mother's.
No, you have your mother's eyes.
Yeah, you have your mother's eyes. And then when he puts that into the pensieve... pensieve. Which I've always thought that was funny because...
Pensive means pensive. Thoughtful.
Yeah, but it's the pensieve. Yeah, the way it's spelled, though... It's spelled the same way as the last names of Lucy and Edmund and, did you notice that? Their last names are spelled the same way that it's spelled.
Who's Lucy and Edmund?
Narnia.
Narnia, okay. I was thinking yeah, Twilight or Peter something.
And
Peter
and, I forgot what her name was. The fourth kid. The one that ends up not ever going back to Narnia.
Oh, the old
after,
one.
Yeah, after Prince Caspian. Oh, I forgot her name.
Yeah.
Oh, well. She's not in the Magician's Net. She's not in the last battle, so she's not that important. Anyways, I thought that was, I thought that part there where they go into his memories, and he's...
That was my favorite part.
Oh my gosh, that was great.
I wish we had gotten to see that the first time, because I would have liked to see that a second time.
Yeah, that was pretty great. Yeah. Also, the actor that they have playing Neville was great in this one.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, he was pretty great in this one. He gets to kill Nagina.
I hope he gets some gigs or continues his acting career.
Yeah, because I think he's a better. I like him better than Daniel Radcliffe.
Okay, and this got me both times watching, especially the first time watching it.
Are you gonna mention that?
The scene where they drop out of the dragon.
Yeah.
Into the lake, and then they get out of the lake, and okay, they put like hand sanitizer on their hands.
Yeah.
And then they're like changing, and the camera keeps going like one of those kissing spins, like it's no one has seen Serendipity, but like all those.